So comparing yourself to other people, it does such a disservice, because everybody's got that greatness within them. Everybody's got something that they're here to do, and to not be afraid to show that to the world.
This is the Cracking Creativity Podcast, episode number 19, with Dan Galperin. Welcome to the Cracking Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Chung, and I'm here to show you how creatives turn their ideas into action, create interesting projects, and build an engaged audience with their shared passions. And let's get creative. In this episode of the Cracking Creativity Podcast, I talked to Dan Galperin, who is the man behind the Manpower Project, the Fight Club for the Soul. He had some great things to say about his travels around the world, how you can love yourself better, and be more confident. He also had a great story about how he got into World Domination Summit, which is where we met this year, and why you should never take no for an answer if you want something bad enough. At the end of the episode, there were some technical difficulties, so it will be a little choppy, but it's still some great stuff. Now on to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Cracking Creativity. Today I have on Dan Galperin. He is the creator of the Manpower Project, which is the Fight Club for the Soul, which I love the subtitle for that. Dan, can you tell us a little bit about your project and what you're doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Kevin. Yeah, the Manpower Project is, like you said, Fight Club for the Soul. It's breaking convention on what it means to live well. It's an opportunity for guys to come in, take off the social mask, and get real with what is challenging them in their life. So I'm creating this platform to empower men so that they can create the lives that they want, both in terms of socially, with relationships and dating and sex, and also with their careers and whatever it is that they're looking to do. The Manpower Project is designed to help support that and to help them live in a more meaningful and more powerful way.
Cool. How did you get started on the project? What was the cause of you to look into, like, being a man and why you want to focus on helping empower people?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. As a guy, I was driven from a young age to just do everything, you know, when it comes to dating or sports or traveling, adventure, jumping out of planes, bungee jumping, personal development, doing courses, challenging my beliefs, trying different things. I had a friend say to me one time, "You don't have to do everything before you're 30, Dan." But for some reason, I was just driven to do all this stuff and develop myself and read books as many as I could and do all these things to develop myself. And I was driven when I was a little kid. I guess this is my version of like a superhero fantasy. I used to say, you know, I want to be a billion times smarter. I want to be a billion times stronger. And just these kind of silly ideas. And so that was sort of like the underlying theme, I guess, of my life, where I've just been driven to understand what life is all about, what the meaning of life is, how can we live a healthier, happier, more meaningful existence. And so, you know, I went about trying to conquer all my fears, challenging myself. You know, I mean, I'm not any different than the average guy. I'm just a guy that's been driven to overcome obstacles and to break through walls and overcome fears and do all of the things that I felt were holding me back. I guess I'm driven for freedom. And when I go about my life, I can't stand to be held in a box in any way, shape, or form. So throughout the course of my journey, I've learned a lot of things. I've been able to overcome a lot of things. And I have an innate desire to help people, to share with people, to help people. And I've gotten to the point now where I want to help create a platform where I can help other people do a similar type thing to what I've done throughout my journey. Mm-hmm. So that was the origin of my desire to create this.
Do you think there was a certain influence when you were young, like a father figure or like a male role model that you were aspiring to be, whether that is a person that you actually knew personally or a fictional character or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say my male role model that I looked up to was Han Solo. That was my guy. I loved his independent spirit, his just I don't give a shit attitude, just, you know, entrepreneurial kind of doing his own thing, and kind of got caught up in being a good guy and helped a lot of people. So I don't know, I always identified with him. I thought Luke Skywalker was you know, kind of a punk. He was a little bit a little bit too much of a ninny for me. But I, you know, to be honest, I mean, that's kind of my silly answer. But the truth is, I didn't really have a lot of strong male role models that I looked up to. I mean, I looked up to my dad, of course, but not in the way that I'm describing, not in the way that I've developed myself. He's a really great guy, really decent man, but not driven on the same level that I am. So I'd say we're kind of opposites in that way. And I never knew either of my grandfathers. So I guess the answer is not really. I sort of figured it out on my own. It was a journey that I took on my own, really without any mentors at all in that way.
What would you consider the first thing that you did that was like, I'm a man?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. That's a great question. Well, traveling was a big thing for me. I traveled with a group to Israel when I was 16, and that was the first taste that I ever had of being pretty independent. We had guides and everything like that, but I got a chance to do a lot of hiking and traveling, and that sort of started me on my international career. At this point, I've traveled to over 35 countries. After that, I went to China during the summer when I was 21, traveled for 2 months in China, and that was a real shell shocker of an experience, very, very different than the United States, obviously. And then from there, I went on to traveling Europe and Asia and Israel, and then eventually did a trip around the world. So I'd say traveling has been a really big piece for me as a man, as an independent person. And the other thing I would say is probably the sports that I've been involved with. I got into running marathons when I was fairly young in my 20s, and that was a huge obstacle that I didn't think I could do it. And I actually did have a couple of mentors in that area. A cousin of mine and my uncle had both run marathons, and I picked their brain a bit and started training for it. It seemed like so huge, I couldn't even possibly imagine doing it. And throughout the course of that training and reading a couple books about it, I was able to get to the level where I could complete a marathon. And that was a huge, what I call a subconscious anchor, anchoring my belief in myself that I could do something that I had initially thought was incredibly daunting and that I didn't believe that I could do.
Mm-hmm. How do you overcome the doubts that you felt when thinking about doing a marathon?
Well, there are a lot of levels answers to that question. I think when I first started doing it, it was just, you know, kind of bring up all the energy and bravado that I could muster to, and all the fight and all the determination that I could get to, and just streamline that into the power that I needed to accomplish that. So I'd say just on pure guts really was the first stage, I would say, of getting through the fear and doubt of that, and just giving it all I've got and not giving in to the fear, which is I think a pretty big part for a lot of people. Just don't give in to the fear. The next level of that, I would say, is breaking it into pieces instead of thinking of it as a huge whole thing that I had to do at one time, 26.2 miles. Instead of thinking of it like that, I would just focus on 1 mile at a time. I just focused on mile one, and I just waited until I saw that one sign. And when I hit that one sign, I would look, and only thing I was looking for was that mile two sign. And I kept going like that, mile after mile after mile, and eventually I got through the whole race. So that's a good metaphor also for just taking things one step at a time.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of the step at a time method, because if you look at any task, even like your daily life, if you look at it and see all the things that you have to do, you're like, oh man, I have so many things to do. But if you break it down, like, what is the next thing I'm supposed to do, it becomes much more easier to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a great book called Getting Things Done by David Allen, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
And he talks about that. Just focus on the next step and the next action. And if you go about it like that, I think you can get very far without being too scared by the big picture.
When you took your travels across the world, what did you notice about different cultures, similarities and differences between people?
Sure. Well, I think the similarities are people are good at their core. People mean well. I believe that. People are helpful and good by nature. I think so. I found that no matter where I was, no matter how limited my language abilities were in a certain country, I could always find someone who would help me as long as I was making an effort to communicate with them and they could understand what I was saying. So I found a lot of help. I can think of, you know, one time when I was in India, stranded on a train platform, and the train kept getting delayed, and I didn't want to miss my train. It was a 21-hour train ride, and I didn't know which one it was, and I was sort of confused because it had been delayed by like 8 hours. And a very nice Indian man came over to me and said, "Oh, what are you doing?" You know, and I explained everything to him. And he said, "Don't worry. I am your Indian father. I will help you." And he took care of me for the next hour and a half, and he explained where I should go and made sure that I was on the right train and everything like that. So I think it's great seeing that no matter how big the language barrier is, that there were always people around that would assist. Of course, cultures are very different. There are different customs and different, you know, ways in which people do things. And you've got to be respectful of that. So I would always try to learn certain customs, learn how to say thank you, learn how to say hello, so that I always at least was showing some type of an effort to communicate and to connect with people no matter where I was. So differences. There's a lot.
There's so many.
So many. It's hard to say exactly which one.
You said that people are inherently good and want to help each other. Is that the reason that you started your project?
I wouldn't say it's the reason I started the project, but that is my outlook on the world and on people. I believe when people act in unconscious ways, in mean ways or ways in which they hurt other people, I think they're doing that out of some type of pain that they're in or some unconscious state where they're not fully connecting with people. And that's sort of a reflection of how they treat themselves and what kind of turmoil is going on inside them. But I do sort of use that as an idea when I help people, because I want people to believe in themselves and I want people to feel good about themselves. One of the most common limiting beliefs that I see with people is I'm not good enough. It's such a universal negative limiting belief that people have. I want to bring out what's great about people and for them to recognize that they don't have to compare themselves with other people. Who they are is great in their own way. So I want them to believe that they're good and that they have value and that they have something to contribute to others. So I would say that's intertwined with my philosophy around how I go about helping people within the format of the Manpower Project.
Mm-hmm. If somebody is in this, you said painful state, how do you get out of that place?
You know, I think one of the biggest reasons why people are in pain is because they don't care for themselves. They don't take good care of themselves. A lot of people are hurting because they have never been taught to be nice to themselves. People are very hard on themselves. When they have those types of limiting beliefs like, I'm not good enough, they then, instead of saying, it's okay, I love you, you know, being nice to yourself, they say, the hell's wrong with you? You know, get with it. You're not doing a good enough job. You need to do X, Y, and Z. You're slacking. You're, you know, whatever. You're getting up too late. You're doing this. You're doing that. You know, just beating themselves up. And I know exactly what that's like because I used to do it to myself. I used to get furious with myself and I literally punched myself in the face, at times. I get so pissed off and so aggravated. So I feel like as much as I didn't enjoy that experience, overcoming those things has been extremely valuable for me to do what I'm doing now in coaching people and guiding people to coming to a better place. So to answer your question, I would say they need to recognize that there's a war going on inside them. And, you know, just something as simple as just, you know, put your hand on your heart and just say, it's okay. It's okay. I love you. You know, say I love you to yourself. You know, we go out into the world and we want other people to love us, to respect us, to appreciate us. And yet we don't give that same level of love and respect and acceptance to ourselves. So when we do that, how can we expect other people to give us that if we're not giving it to ourselves? So I think it all starts with how we treat ourselves.
There are two books that come to mind when you gave that answer. One was this book called Love Yourself by Kamal Ravikant. Mm. And in it, he explains how he was like sickly, deathly sick, like in his bed, and he didn't know what to do and why he was like in this state. But the way he changed that was just to constantly tell himself that he loved himself, and now he's like consulting for businesses and he's got this big following, and it's just incredible what you can do when you just give yourself that like self, when you reflect on yourself and tell yourself that everything will be all right.
Yeah. That's great. I haven't read that book, but I will read it now.
It's a pretty short one. It's it sounds like a lot like what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. You know, I have a cousin who's stressed out all the time. He's a workaholic. He takes good care of his family financially, and he loves them and everything. But he just works himself. He's like working himself to death. He's going through these health issues right now. And I want so badly to just tell him, look, just relax, man. Take it easy. Start loving yourself. You know, just stop working so hard and just give yourself a break. You can't keep working yourself like that year after year after year without something happening to break yourself down. And the same thing happened to my grandfather. He died young, about 60, because of the same thing. So, you know, we think that because our lives are so complicated and messy and there's so much that we want to do and there's so many things that we see as obstacles, that we think there has to be some kind of equally crazy solution that to help us. But in reality, it's so, so simple. If you can just take a deep breath and say, I love you, you'll feel the calmness come over your body and relax you. And when you're in that relaxed state, you know, then all of your creativity can come out, all of your energy and all of your affection for others. When you're feeling love for yourself and you're opening up your heart, you're opening up all the goodness within you. You're opening up, you know, all the good energy. The heart is like your main battery, and if your main battery shut down, you know, you're working off of the power that's, you know, that's auxiliary. It's not the main charge of the battery. So if you can open your heart, you're opening yourself to everything that you want. You know, you love yourself, that gives you the ability to love others. And when you love others, people are going to recognize that and say, wow, there's something special about him. What's different about him? Mm-hmm. Because most people just don't radiate that. So,
right.
Yeah. So to get into your creativity, I think that's an awesome way to crack that open.
Yeah. It's all about having the positive mindset as opposed to the negative mindset, because your mindset will dictate everything about you, like your body, your health. Everything is based upon essentially how you view the world.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're working on some project, either if you believe you can do it or you believe you can't, you know, as Henry Ford or somebody said, either way, you're right. You know?
Yeah. So, and then the second book that came to mind was Choose Yourself. I'm not sure if you're familiar with James Altucher.
I know the title. I have not read that one.
It's a pretty good one. In it, he talks about like having being spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally healthy. Mm-hmm. And by doing that every day, great things will come of it, regardless of what's happening in your surroundings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more you take care of yourself, and the more you feel good about your life, the more you're radiating all the good stuff you want and attracting all the good stuff you want, mm-hmm. You know, with ideas, with people, with resources and motivation, everything. Yeah, it's critical. It's the basis for everything, I think.
Right. You said you had taken a trip around the world. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I was in New York, and I wanted to mention, since your podcast is about creativity, that I was an actor in New York. That was the beginning of my creative journey. But a number of years later, I was still living in New York, and I decided that I wanted to take a trip around the world. And so I was originally planning to go with my girlfriend at the time, but we ended up breaking up. And so I decided to take the trip by myself anyway. And so I researched round the world trip tickets. I arranged everything, decided where I wanted to go. And And then I went. And actually, I'd like to go back since this is about creativity, and I want to share a quick experience that I had about this trip around the world. 6 months before I made this trip, and before I started seriously getting into the idea of booking the trip, I was sitting on a rooftop with a buddy of mine, and we were just looking out onto the skyline of New York. And he said, you know, if you won the lottery, what would you do? And I said, you know, I would take a trip around the world. I would go to 6 different parts of the world for a month each that I had never been to before and just explore those parts of the world. And then I just forgot about it. You know, it was just like this little daydream I had and kind of had fun thinking of the idea. 6 months later, I now have the means to take a break from my life and take a trip around the world. Unexpectedly, I had some good fortune that happened. And so I booked this trip, and I was kind of stressed out. You know, my life had gotten stressful at that time, and so I was really looking forward to getting away and really exploring the world. So I went down to Mexico for 10 days and met a friend of mine from New York, actually, and we just hung out on the beach and had a good time. Then I went to Colorado for a week. Then I went to Hawaii for a week. Then I spent about 7 weeks in Southeast Asia, traveling around Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, and Singapore. And then from there, I went on to Nepal, and I spent about a month in Nepal, and I did this thing called the Annapurna Circuit, which was the some of the highest mountains in the world on this 200-mile trek. And so I went out, and it goes up over 17,000 feet, way over where Everest Base Camp is. So it's way, way up there. And we went on this great journey. I met up with a bunch of other people from all over the world, from England, from Germany, from Australia, and we had a great adventure up top. It was nothing but snow, which was pretty exciting. And then came back down. I had a great moment. I was sitting in a hot spring about 15 days into our hike, and my legs were shot. I was so tired. And we were just sitting there drinking beer in the hot springs, and this storm started overhead with thunder and lightning and everything. And some of the people were getting out of the hot springs because they didn't want to be hit by lightning. And I was so tired. And in that moment, I just said, you know what? If this is it, this is it. But I'm not getting out. And it was a great moment for me because it was a freeing moment where I just said, you know, I'm okay. If I have to die in a day, I'm okay. And of course I was fine, but just the attitude of, you know what? It's okay if I die because this is what I want to be doing right now. And this is what I'm going to do. And so I took that moment away from that journey that I took. From there, I went to India and traveled around. Did I say New Zealand? I think I skipped New Zealand. I went to New Zealand for a month after I went to Hawaii, but went to India after Nepal. And there I visited a bunch of cities, and it was really fascinating, very spiritual. And I ended up at one place. I actually had my plane ticket stolen in New Zealand, and that was a whole another story, but that I won't get into, but I freaked out when that happened. But so I was able to recover all my tickets in Singapore. But when I got to India, I was supposed to fly to a different part of India, to Goa. And I wasn't able to do it because my plane tickets weren't, I had not recovered those plane tickets internally within India, and I had forgotten about it. So I ended up going to a different city. And there I ended up visiting and seeing a lot of different places, and I really enjoyed that. And I was kind of done seeing everything. And I said, what else is here? And they said, well, there's an ashram up the road. I said, oh, ashram, I've heard of that. What is that again? You know? And so I ended up, I was just going to go for 3 days. And honestly, I was just going to go as a tourist just to check it out, just to say that I went and kind of, you know, enjoy it and see what happened. I ended up staying for 3 weeks, and it was a really incredible, deeply spiritual experience for me, in which a lot of things changed for me in terms of my outlook on life and my energy. And then I carried that with me on past India when I went to Africa, and I spent about a month in Southern Africa, and then stopped in the Netherlands on the way home in Amsterdam, and then came back. But my life kind of changed after that trip. There was my life before the trip and then my life after the trip. I was very depressed when I left and in a really great space when I got back. So that was sort of the beginning of my second leg of my journey in life, I guess you could say.
Awesome. Out of all the things that you've done, because it looks like you've done a lot from your bio,
mm-hmm.
jumped out of planes and off cliffs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What was the most memorable or impactful experience? Would it be the one that you had in India?
That was a really big one for me. So I would say in terms of impact, yes, that was probably the biggest. But I had some other experiences. You know, all of the experiences of challenging myself physically, like I jumped off a 700-foot bridge in South Africa. It was the highest commercial bungee jump in the world and the highest single arch bridge in the world. And, you know, jumping off a 700-foot bridge, it's like jumping off a 70-story building. It was very frightening, of course. So, you know, ramping up my level of courage was huge. But in terms of an event, I'd say there was a vision quest that I went on that also had a lot of meaning for me. I spent 4 days in the woods without eating anything. And I spent 4 days preparing with a guide and a guy who ran the, you know, the group and sort of took everybody through some of the rituals that you could use and some of the other things that you could do. And actually, it was really, I'll tell a real quick, interesting thing that happened while I was there. There was this ritual. There's not much to do, and you couldn't take any reading material. So you couldn't read anything, and you couldn't eat. You could drink water, and that's it. So there wasn't much to do except these rituals that we had been taught. And I, at the time, I was ready. I had been through the whole dating thing. I was back from my trip around the world. I was ready to settle down. I was ready to meet somebody. And so I did this ritual in which I brought rocks and big rocks that represented all the qualities that I wanted to be and all of the different supporting either deities or family members that I wanted to include. And I included one rock for my wife, who I had never met yet. And then I went through this ritual where I started a fire, and then I put two sticks in the fire after I yelled something into the sky. I forgot exactly what the words were, but it was something to create this energy of me with a twin, with a partner and a soulmate. And I put those sticks in the fire and I said, you know, let the energy of this carry to wherever it needs to go to manifest this situation for me. 2 months later, I met my wife at a wedding. So I don't know. You could say it was the ritual, or you could say that I was ready. I kind of maybe intuitively felt that it was around the corner, but there you go.
Huh. That's awesome when it happens like that. And you don't know whether or not it's destined to be or not, but you definitely feel some sort of different energy when stuff like that occurs.
Sure. sure. I love when that type of synchronicity happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. If someone came to you and wanted to do a similar adventure to what you've done, or maybe one of the things that you've done, what would you tell them? What advice would you give?
I would say go for it. If there's something calling to you, then you should do it. You should challenge yourself in whatever ways you feel drawn toward. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to do anything outside the box. You know, I mean, I've done lots of things where, you know, if I had run the idea past my friends first, they would have been like, what are you doing that for, man? Are you crazy? What's wrong with you? You know, or why would you do that? You know, so I would say follow your heart. Do what you're called to do, even if it seems weird or different or, you know, outside the box or just completely crazy. If you feel the urge and the desire to do it, excuse me, just go for it. Just, you know, do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the project and what you're doing. Can you explain to the audience some of the things that you do?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I do, well, I'll start by saying that I called it the Manpower Project because I want it to be an evolving entity that can change depending on what we want to create, not just me standing up and saying, this is what I'm doing, but inviting people to come in and participate with what I'm doing and to give me feedback. So if I'm doing one-on-one coaching with people, and I'm coaching them through various challenges in their lives, helping them to see past their obstacles and their fears so that they can uncover what's great about themselves and step into that really great life that they want. I also do group hangouts where I'm moderating and leading, but I'm also encouraging feedback from people, because a lot of times the other guys can give a different perspective that may be relevant to what's happening with that other person. Uh-huh. So I really love that kind of interactive format as well. And next summer, I'm going to be doing the Manpower Project live, where I'm going to invite people to come to Denver to be live with me in a live event where I will create it in such a way, as you suggested before, to recreate some of the things that I've done to help give that experience in some small way to them to help them to gain the power that I've gained through the experiences that I've had. So it's a constantly evolving project, and I always welcome feedback in whatever ways that I can help people, whether it's the topics that we're covering, whether it's the formats, or, you know, whatever people want, in whatever way I can serve people, that's what I want to do. So at this stage, it's still kind of what I've created, but I'm very much open to getting feedback about how I can help people in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that it's a constantly evolving project. Has it evolved since the very inception of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I've gotten to the point where the hangout format is limiting in the sense that, I mean, I love the intimacy of it, but it's limiting in the sense that only so many people can be involved in it. So I'm looking to do a webinar format in which I can get more guys involved. You know, some guys just want to sit and listen. And one of the features that I want to provide for people is that if they want to be anonymous, they can be, and they can register on the website with an email that they created specifically for that. so that they can be anonymous and they can participate in all of the things without having to actually say who they are. Because a lot of things are touchy subjects for people, and a lot of guys don't feel comfortable expressing themselves and going out on a limb, saying what's bothering them or what their challenges are. You know, a lot of guys, you know, kind of keep everything inside. So I want to create a format where guys can be anonymous and silent and just listen and absorb what's happening. So I'm looking at a webinar format where it can be unlimited people that can participate, and it can be me and a guest or possibly one of the featured participants, and to create a format where we can discuss something, people can chime in and either send me questions, or actually I can turn their audio on where they can talk to me and everyone else can hear them as well, to allow that interaction as well. So that's the format that I'm looking into playing with at the moment.
Hmm. What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned by coaching people? I know coaching inherently is you teaching somebody, but what have you learned from other people?
What have I learned personally?
Yeah.
I think what I've learned in the broad sense is that we're all the same. We all have the same doubts, the same fears, the same insecurities, and the same limiting beliefs. Maybe, you know, obviously some of us are stronger than others in certain areas of our lives, but innately we all have these limiting beliefs about ourselves. So, and like I said before, the most common universal limiting belief that I see in people is I'm not good enough. And that is something that I've dealt with my whole life. I continue to deal with that every day, but on a different level than what I was doing 20 years ago. So I think anybody, even famous popular stars and gurus of, you know, creatives, actors, artists, self-help gurus, teachers, writers, everybody who we think is amazing and they're just awesome and we want to be like them, if you got into that person's head, there would be some issues around I'm not good enough. No matter mm-hmm. what they've done. I mean, I know when I was in New York and studying acting and studying plays, I remember one of the playwrights, I actually forgot what his name was at the moment, but he was a Tony-winning playwright, and he wrote amazing plays, and he committed suicide. You know, I thought, what's that all about? You know, like Robin Williams, amazing creative, amazing, amazing actor, amazing performer, and yet he committed suicide. What does that tell you? It tells you that people are insecure, no matter what level of success, fame, money, it doesn't matter. That it's a universal thing that we all deal with in one form or another. So I feel confident talking to people and helping them overcome that, because I can see that that's everywhere and mm-hmm. certainly see it in myself as well.
Right. What has been the biggest change that you've seen in somebody from when you started coaching them?
I think it's about their confidence level in terms of, you know, with women especially, having the courage to believe in themselves enough to pursue what they want and to talk to women, to ask them out, to have the confidence to pursue a relationship, or the confidence, you know, I've had guys that were not confident sexually. Maybe they got started late and then they were able to realize that they were focused on the wrong things. They were focused on what they were afraid of. And I helped them to redirect to a place of focusing on what it was that they actually wanted instead of what they were afraid that they couldn't get or afraid, that they couldn't rise to that level. So I would just say, confidence is really a big one, you know, in terms of expressing themselves, in terms of taking action, and just their level of belief. I would say that's kind of the biggest thing that I see with people when I work with them, is their ability to take their life to a different level because their level of belief has grown.
And what is like the first step that someone can take from not believing they are good enough to, like, on the road to the increasing their confidence?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is you've got to see what's good about you. You've got to recognize that there are great things about you. And I think the first step is stop comparing yourself with other people. Mm-hmm. Because that's a deadly, deadly thing to do. When you compare yourself to other people, most likely you're going to compare yourself to the people that you think are more successful, have more money, are better looking, or in a better situation. Very rarely do we compare ourselves with people that we think are worse off than we are. When we see them, we think, oh, you know, they're fine, but I'm not going to really think about them too much. So comparing yourself to other people, it does such a disservice, because everybody's got that greatness within them. Everybody's got something that they're here to do, and to not be afraid to show that to the world. Because also when you compare yourself to other people, you try to act like other people. And when you try to act like other people, you shut down what's great about you. You shut down your creativity. You shut down your energy and the bright light that's within you. So I think when you start to say, you know what, that person can be successful and that person can have what they have, but you know what, who I am is good. I like who I am, and I have a lot to share and to give to the world. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to focus on what's good about me. And I think that when you can kind of shift the paradigm between I'm just this guy in the world, how do I stack up against everybody, to I'm this guy who's got some amazing stuff if I can just let it out. I think that's a really big shift for people once they start to see that.
That is some awesome advice, because you can only live your own life. There's no way you can live somebody else's life. So you might as well make the best of what you are given and the gifts that you were given in this world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And even the guys that you think are really successful or more successful than you, they've got some hang-ups. They've got some problems. They've got some obstacles. They've got some fears. And so while it might look rosy from your perspective looking at them, you know, they've got a whole different vantage point that they're dealing with. So comparing yourself to anyone really is not very useful.
Right.
You know.
Before we get into the last round of questions, I want you to talk about how we met and your journey into World Domination Summit.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering when we were going to get to that. Yeah, I knew about the World Domination Summit, you know, before, but I really hadn't thought that I was going to go, and it's put on by Chris Guillebeau and his company. And I met Chris in November, and he gave me one of those golden tickets when he was on his book tour. And at the time I wasn't thinking that I was going to go. But about a month before the event, I started thinking, you know what, I want to do my event next summer. You know, I enjoy these type of events where I get to meet a lot of cool people and, you know, get to see great speakers and mm-hmm. participate in activities. So I thought, I'm going to go for it. And so I went on Portland Craigslist and I found a guy that wanted to sell a ticket. And he was like, yeah, you know, I haven't completed my registration. You can go on and you can change everything and all that. And I said, oh, great, great. And so I went online because it was only a few weeks out from from the event, and I booked my flight to Portland. And then about a day later, as I was going into the registration thing, I realized I could change everything within the registration except for the name. And so I talked to him, and he was like, oh, yeah, I realized that. And so we contacted, and they have a policy of you can't transfer a name 60 days out, which I think is a bit ridiculous. But so we contacted the concierge, and I thought, you know, hopefully we can get this worked out one way or another. It was like $100 transfer fee. Okay, so we'll pay that. And nope. They weren't helping us. They were sticking to their policy, and that was it. So because I had exchanged a few emails with Chris, I thought, you know what? I'll send him an email and just see, maybe he can help me. And so I sent him an email. It bounced back to me and said, oh, I'm super busy getting ready for World Domination Summit. If you have a problem, just contact the concierge. So that kind of put us back at square one. So I made the decision that I was just going to go to Portland anyway and go for it. So I went, and I got there a couple days before the event started, and I went to the theater the day before the registration was starting. They were doing the academies and everything, but it was the day before the big event started. And I thought, maybe if I can get to them like the day before, I can talk some sense into them and they can help me. And so I actually did meet a few people that were working on the sets, and they gave me the contact info of the woman who is the head of registration. So I sent her an email and did not hear back from her. So the next day I go to the event, the registration for the event, and I managed to track down this person who's the head of registration, and I started asking her, you know, I told her my situation, and she said, well, I'm sorry the guy told you the wrong thing, but there's nothing I can do about it. And I said, please, I said, I just flew all the way from Denver. Isn't there something you can do? You know, come on, you know, I'm showing good faith here. I came all the way to Portland, you know, can't you do something for me? And she was like, I'm afraid not. You know, there's nothing we can do. It's too late, and there's nothing I can do. She said, there's lots to do in Portland. I said, oh, great, thanks, you know. And so I said, let me volunteer, please. You know, just I'll volunteer, and, you know. And she's like, nope, we already had a bunch of, you know, process that we went through to screen volunteers, and that's already finished. You can't do that. I said, I'll do anything. I said, let me sweep the floors. Let me work security. Just let me in, you know. And I said, I'll even speak on stage. And she was like, no, so many people want to speak on stage. You'll never, you know, just kind of mocked me about offering to speak on stage. And I was frustrated. I normally do not take no for an answer. And I was kind of, you know, thinking to myself, what am I going to do? I said, well, what about Chris? Can Chris, you know, okay this? And she said, well, we don't even know where he is. And I said, well, who else can I talk to? Who can make the decision on this? She's like, well, it's my decision. I said, so you can decide. So you have the ability to decide. She's like, well, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing I can do. The answer is no. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, and then I kind of got into pleading mode. I was like, please. I was like, just do something for me. I was like, I'll buy you lunch. I'll buy you dinner. I'll buy you drinks. I'll buy you flowers. Just please, you know. And she's like, no, 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 no. So I was like, I was really pissed off. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. And I just wandered around for a bit. And then I came over and started talking to some of the participants on the stairs there in the square. And I started telling them the story. They're like, oh, really? Are you kidding me? You know, and all this stuff. And so I went back over and I said, look, thanks for talking to me. Thanks for considering it. I said, I just talked to all those people up there, and they all think that I should be allowed in. So can you please help me? Please. And she said, nope, not going to help you. Okay. So I ended up at Starbucks after that, and I'm kind of racking my brain. I'm just like, what can I do? I sent Chris another email, which, of course, bounced back and said, sorry, I'm hosting the WDS. You know, these long emails that said, listen, you're the guy that started the blog, The Art of Nonconformity, right? I'm doing something as a nonconformist. What can you do to help me? Come on, help me out. You know, like, let's bend some rules. I said, what is nonconformity without breaking a few rules? Come on, you know. And so, you know, he didn't get that email. Then I sent another email. It said, if something's really urgent, send an email to my assistant. And so I sent her an email. I got nothing back. So I'm thinking, God, what am I going to do? And so I wandered around for a bit, and then an idea came to me. The guy who wanted to transfer the ticket to me, I'll call him John Hart. He lives in Vancouver. And so I thought, I actually even texted him. I said, is there any way you can get down here in the morning and, you know, just pick up the pass and give it to me, and then I'll give you the money? And he said, he was like, you know, I can't make it, sorry. And so I got this idea. Okay, I'm going to Google John Hart Portland. Maybe I can find another guy with the name of John Hart that can go to the registration table and pick up the pass, and then I'm in. So I Google him, and I find a guy with this name, and he works at one of the local businesses. And so I call, and I say, hi, is John there? And she said, no, he's not here right now. I said, I really need to talk to him. I said, can I get his phone number? It's really urgent. She said, no, I don't think so. Give me your name and I'll tell him that you called and I'll have him call you. Okay. And so I gave her my name and number. Didn't hear a thing. So I'm thinking, I Googled a few more. I didn't find anything that seemed really obvious for me to be able to get a phone number. And so I just kind of gave up. I was like, I guess it's not meant to be. Oh yeah. I did actually tell that head of registration. I said, please, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be here. Let me in. You know, and she's like, nope. But anyway, so I kind of give up for the evening. I walk around for a couple hours and then just, you know, head back. And then so the next morning I get a phone call from this guy. And so I was like, you know, this is going to sound a little weird, but I came here from Denver and I'm going to this thing. And I explain the whole situation to him. And he says, all right, man. He's like, right on. That sounds pretty cool. I'm like, really? I was like, can you get down here and pick up the pass? He said, I have to work. I get off at 6, but then, you know, I'll go see if I can do it. I said, okay. He sounded like he was into it, but I wasn't sure. And meanwhile, so I'm missing the first day of WDS, and I was pissed, but, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe just maybe something will happen. So he doesn't call me for the rest of the day until 6 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, I get this call. Hey man, it's John Hart. Oh, hey man, I got it. I got the pass. Really? You got the pass? I was like, woohoo! That's awesome. And so the guy even drove it over to where I was. And so, I didn't say that I offered him $50 to go pick up the pass. So when I met with him, I gave him the $50 and I gave him another $10 on top. And I said, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And he gave me the whole bag, you know, with the backpack and the water bottle and the notebook and all this stuff. And in the pass, of course. And so I just thanked him and said, you know, if I learn anything good, I'll share it with you. And I just wished him well and said thanks. And the next morning, stood in line for WDS and I met you. And the rest is history. As we entered there, I especially enjoyed giving high fives to the greeters as I came in and said, woo, yeah, baby, I'm in. and just enjoyed the day as John Hart.
Yeah, that was an awesome story when you first told it to me when you were coming in. And I thought everyone should know that you don't necessarily have to take no for an answer. You can find creative ways around any situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those things where I went in knowing that it was going to be a challenge. I knew it was going to be kind of an outside the box situation, but I figured if my faith was strong enough, if I just said, you know what, I'm going to make this happen somehow, some way, and I don't give up, hopefully something good will happen. And it did. So yeah, it was a good lesson in not taking no for an answer.
Cool. I have a few more questions left. The first is, do you have a morning routine? And if you do, what is it?
Yes, I do. I do have a morning routine. I used to be a night owl. I used to stay up late and get very creative at night and want to do all these things and had all these great ideas. And I realized that in order to accomplish all of the things that I wanted to accomplish in my life, I had to make myself into a morning person, because that's the time when I can get a really nice start to my day and get everything moving in the right direction. So I've converted myself into a morning person. Now I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing I do before I even get out of bed is make an intention. How do I want the day to unfold? What do I want to feel? I want to feel amazing today. I want something great to happen. And then I get out of bed and I go downstairs. I make my coffee. And during that time, when the coffee's brewing, I do some deep breathing exercises. Sometimes I'll do what we talked about earlier about putting my hand over my heart and saying, I love you, and just doing that as I exhale. Or sometimes I stretch, depending on how I'm feeling. So just do something either to warm up my body or my mind, my emotions, kind of get myself relaxed and into my day. Then I take my coffee and I go sit down and I read for about 45 minutes. And I read on subjects that I'm interested in that are relevant to my business or relevant to my work. Sometimes a biography or something like that. And just kind of set myself into a nice space where I have that nice relaxed start to my day where I can read and absorb some good information. When I'm done with that, I head down to my writing desk. And I sit and write for about another 45 minutes or so. And lately it's been blogging, because I've been doing a lot of blog work with my website. So I'll sit down and write one or sometimes two blog posts, depending on how productive I'm feeling or how inspired I'm feeling. And then I'll go and write a plan for my day, think of the things, kind of brainstorm everything that I know I want to address that day. And then I'll pick out the three or four most important things that I need to do, and I'll put those at the top. And then I'll plan out my day with the times, kind of schedule out my day. When I'm done with that, I go to the gym or I go run, do something, some exercise, kind of let the day kind of percolate in my mind about what I want to do. And then I come back, I eat my breakfast, and then I start my day. So that's my routine.
I'm glad you mentioned reading in the beginning of your day, because I like to ask people some of the stuff that they're reading. What are some books or resources that you're currently going through?
Well, let's see. One book I'm reading is called Man's Quest. Let me see. Man's Eternal Quest by Paramahansa Yogananda. He's the yogi that wrote Autobiography of a Yogi. It's very famous. He's one of the very few Indian yogis and swamis that have come over to the United States and lived here, not just visited, but lived here for many, many years. He lived here over 30 years, I think. And so I'm reading that book. I just finished Walden by Henry David Thoreau. I am reading by F. Scott Fitzgerald, The Last Tycoon, and I'm reading Transformation by Bill Phillips, whose physical programs I've followed in the past. And there might be one more, but those are the main ones right now, I think.
Along similar lines, who is someone that you think is creative, and what do they do that makes them creative?
Well, speaking of books, not so many months ago, I read a biography of Steve Jobs. And I admire Steve Jobs, and I think he was incredibly creative in the way that he went about his business and how he created Apple. So he is a big role model of mine in terms of creativity in business and just being a brilliant person with a great vision. So I admire what he did because he was able to create amazing products and services that nobody had ever thought of before. And he had such a strong vision for what he wanted. He cared about every aspect of what he did. It wasn't just what people saw, but it was also, I mean, it was the design of the computers. It was what the computers could do. It was the design of the computers right down to the insides of the computers, where people would normally never look at the inside of a computer, but he wanted to make sure everything was beautiful the way that it was created. So it was a work of art. And so I greatly admire his tenacity and his vision. A lot of people thought he was an asshole, but he, in my opinion, he just had such a strong vision of what he wanted. And his only goal was to bring people together to create that and to work on that, that when people didn't get it or got in his way somehow, he just kind of mowed them down. So I won't say that I'd like to emulate that aspect, but I do have a little bit of that in me as far as when I have a vision for something and I want to create something, it's kind of tunnel vision about how I want to do it. And then, I think that creativity, just that level of creativity is so inspiring because he didn't care about the money. He became a billionaire, but the thing he cared about was creating something. And, you know, people ask me sometimes, oh, so what are your methods for, you know, monetizing your business? And I was like, you know, I'm not worried about monetizing my business right now. What I'm worried about is creating something. And when I create something good, then people will be glad to be a part of it. And so that's how I look at my business, the same way that Steve Jobs looked at his business.
Awesome. My last question is, what is your definition of creativity and what can people do to be more creative?
My definition of creativity is creating something outside the box. Like, I love the concept of the Iron Chef, where they just throw a bunch of ingredients on a table and say, make something. So taking different resources, using all of your energy, your ideas, the people that you're working with, and the materials and whatever you have to work with, whatever technology you have, and just put it all together into something that's never been made before. So the advice that I would say about becoming more creative or allowing that creativity to come out is just be expansive and allow yourself to expand in your ideas and your whatever and go outside the box and don't be afraid to be out there. Some of the greatest artists in the world are people that did stuff that was way outside the lines and people thought, oh, that's weird, that's crazy. And then, of course, they became super famous for it because they just allowed themselves not to judge it and to just follow their inspiration, follow their intuition, allow themselves to grow and expand into whatever areas they are called to and just do it. You know, As I was talking, I was just thinking of Lady Gaga. You know, she's out there. You know, she's weird. But, you know, people love that. She's so weird that people are into it. You know, they love it because she's different. She's not trying to follow anybody. She's not trying to pretend to be anybody. So just trust your own ideas. Trust your own inspiration and just go for it, no matter how weird or outside the box it might seem.
Well, Dan, it's been an awesome interview. Where can people keep up to date with what you're doing and find out what you're up to?
Yeah, it was awesome to be here, Kevin. I really, really enjoyed the time we spent together talking about this stuff. people can find me at manpowerproject.com. And come check out the website. We've got a bunch of blog posts that I've written. I do my own podcast, and I've put up about 4 episodes of that, and some resources and things. And I offer coaching and some different hangouts. So I would love for you to come and visit and participate with the Manpower Project, because my goal is to get you to the next level, however I can do that. So if that sounds interesting to you, I would love to hear from you.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and thanks again for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us.
It's been great talking to you as well, Kevin. Thanks so much.
All right,
bye.
And that's it for the 19th episode of Cracking Creativity. For show notes, go to crackingcreativity.org/19. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes at crackingcreativity.org/subscribe. Also, feel free to write a review or leave a comment about the show. Hope this stoked your creative fires, and I'll see you next time on Cracking Creativity.